When the forest burns along the road, like God's eyes in my headlights. When the dogs are looking for their bones, and it's raining ice picks on your steel shore. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Traces of Reality Radio on tracesofreality.com, live on the Public Broadcasting Network. I am your host, Guillermo Jimenez. Today is Saturday, February 16, 2013. Thank you all so much for joining me today. I'm really excited for today's show. We have a guest today and an interview lined up here that is sure to be one of the most important that we have done on this show yet. Joining me in just a few minutes is Miss Sabelle Edmonds, the founder and publisher of Boiling Frogs Post, author of the book Classified Woman, the Sabelle Edmonds story. In fact, Sabelle Edmonds has, I guess, the unfortunate distinction of being the most classified woman in all of U.S. history. And that's something that I definitely want to discuss with her, among many other things. So, again, we'll be bringing you that here in just a few minutes. So you have some time here to call up your friends, let them know. Tune in to Traces of Reality Radio today. Tune in to RBN. You don't want to miss this one. Again, Sabelle Edmonds on the show today. So much to go over. If you're not familiar with Miss Edmonds and her story, you know, I'm willing to bet most of you out there listening right now on RBN probably are. You'll remember Sabelle as an FBI whistleblower, one of the few brave and courageous people out there willing to speak up when they were told to keep quiet. So Sabelle's is a very important story, and it relates directly to 9/11 and the ensuing cover-up. And I hope to get into a little bit of that also. But more importantly, or equally as important, at least, is what's happening today and how far we have come, how far the police state and just the outright despotic government rule has advanced in the past decade since 9/11. I mean, do you all out there listening right now, do you all remember when torture was a big deal? I mean, do you remember that? Do you remember Abu Ghraib in that whole scandal? Do you remember the first time you were asked to take off your shoes at an airport? Do you remember the first time we invaded illegally invaded Afghanistan and Iraq? I mean, how distant does that all seem now in comparison to drone warfare, to bombing Yemen and Somalia and Pakistan, and covert operations in Africa and South America, with the TSA now everywhere, not just in airports? Grope downs, these porno scanners, these targeted killings, indefinite detention, the disposition matrix, the NDAA. How far have we descended into tyranny in just 10 years is really incredible. So we're calling out the American police state for what it is, how we got here, and importantly, what can be done about it. So we'll get into that with our special guest today, Sabelle Edmonds. Also on the program, as usual, we're going to do our regular segment with Traces of Reality writer Danny Benavides. We're going to do the Traces of Reality weekend review, going over news and headlines in the second hour. I also want to take some time to squeeze in a call or two during our interview with Miss Edmonds, or you know later on during the news and headlines portion. Again, if you want to call in and join in the conversation, the number to call is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. Once again, we got Sabelle Edmonds on the show after this break. Stay tuned. Keep it around here on Traces of Reality Radio. Thank you.
Check. Get your dough, watch it go. Back to the people that hold us some. Basic ancient secrets they keeping in us, they stole it from us. Be the Joseph Polis, so only those that skin and know can counteract the status. Forward balance, act with trade, go on rep by me. CIP, use by the beast to check and check. Charging the car can cause an alarm as part of the armor check.
All right, we are back. This is Traces of Reality Radio. I am your host, Guillermo Jimenez. Thank you so much for joining me. Again, today on the show, we have Sabell Edmonds, a FBI whistleblower, the founder and publisher of Boiling Frogs Post, and author of the book Classified Woman, the Sabell Edmonds story. And let's get right into it. Ms. Edmonds, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, hi, and thank you for inviting me.
Oh, absolutely. It's truly an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. You know, we have a lot to go over, but just to give folks an idea, maybe someone who's tuning into RBN or to the show for the first time and has not heard about you or your story before, could you maybe just briefly fill them in on how you came to be known as the most classified woman in U.S. history?
Sure. Of course, the emphasis here is going to be briefly.
Right.
Because as you know, this has been such a complex case.
Exactly.
With so many different facets. I never worked for the FBI. I never worked for any government agency. I had not worked for any government agency, period, until 9/11. 3 days after 9/11, I started working for the FBI as a language specialist for several languages. This included Farsi, that's a language spoken in Iran. Also Turkish, and that's the language spoken in Turkish, but also various Turkic languages that are spoken in several countries within Central Asia and Caucasus, such as Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, etc. And so after 9/11, the FBI contacted me, and they basically begged me to immediately go and work for them, even if as a contractor. They said I could determine my own hours, because they had tons of documents, whether recorded audio documents or written documents to be translated. I had a top secret clearance, and I started working for the FBI. And very shortly after I started working for the agency, I came across some really massive issues. And some of them were the to-be-expected bureaucratic bungling wrongdoings. But more importantly, there were some criminal cases, criminal operations by our own government that were being covered up. And some of these were directly related to the, to what took place in 9/11 here, which again, not many people know exactly what happened, because we have conflicting facts on that. Well, as I said, I was very new to government. I have a master's degree in public policy. I have bachelor degrees in criminal justice and criminal psychology. And I was very naive. I was really green. I said, okay, well, they, according to our laws, there are channels that I can disclose these incredibly important issues, wrongdoing, some of these major cover-ups, because based on our laws, there are supposed to be these channels, like congressional committees, whether within the Senate, like Senate Intelligence Committee, House Intelligence Committee, or Judiciary Committees. Then there is this body that is referred to as Inspector General's Office within each agency. You know, well, these people have the same bosses who basically are engaged in wrongdoing. But I was, and then there is this separation of powers in our country, because I came to the United States in 1988. I came here to go to university, and I got my citizenship in 2003, 2004. So I was really a big believer of this illusion being sold, marketed to most of us Americans within the academia, within the mainstream media, that we have this thing called Constitution, separation of powers, the system of checks and balances. So I decided to test that, to put those so-called systems into work. So I did go to Congress eventually, because first I brought up these issues to the higher ups within the FBI, all the way to the director's office, which is Director Mueller's office. And I did this internally. And a lot of people are under this impression that whistleblowers are these disgruntled employees that jump out there, go see media and leak information to the public. That is not the case, not only in my case, but hundreds and hundreds of whistleblowers who are part of my organizations, whistleblowers that I have come to know. Everybody tries this so-called system first. And the system is first, internally, you report it to your boss, to your boss's bosses, all the way to the director's office. Then you go to Congress, then you go to the inspector general's office. If these things don't work, then you go to courts. Well, I did all of the above.
Right.
And before I did, when I brought up these issues internally, the first thing that took place, I was retaliated against. You know, the FBI agents came and confiscated my home computer. They accused me of communicating these issues, not with the reporters, but with congressional offices, which actually under Constitution you should be doing, especially when you come to issues such as violation of constitutional stuff or criminal conduct by the executive branch. And they hooked me to the polygraph test. I actually passed the polygraph test. Eventually they fired me. And the Congress, by this time, they were investigating my case. They were, they even were setting up a date to have a huge public hearings. Also, I got attorneys and went to court. Well, immediately after that, the Attorney General at the time, this was Attorney John Ashcroft during the Bush administration in 2002, came out and invoked this really arcane and at the time not very well known privilege, executive privilege called the state secrets privilege, saying everything about my case is classified and they're considered state secrets, thus this case cannot proceed in courts. And immediately after that, the executive branch, the Justice Department, issued a formal gag order on Congress, and they said, you no longer can investigate this case. You cannot hold public hearings. Now, this by itself was an illegal move because the executive branch can't impose a gag order on a different branch, which is the legislative branch. However, as we know, our congressional people have been readily, complicit with all this stuff. They complied. And they said, yes, sir, even though your order is illegal, unconstitutional, we won't even utter her name after this. I mean, this is after two senior senators, Senators Grassley and Leahy, went on CBS 60 Minutes. They said, we are going to turn the FBI and the Justice Department upside down on this case. This is what they said publicly.
Right.
And millions of people watched in 2002 CBS 60 Minutes episode. Well, those people, since the gag order, has not even said Sybil Edmonds because supposedly they are not allowed to say it.
Right.
Eventually, I went all the way to the Supreme Court and, and that channel was also shut down by the government, the executive branch, and the Supreme Court said, even if she's right, we cannot hear the case because everything about her, according to the Justice Department, is classified. During this time, at the last stage of my battle, legal battle, actually the ACLU stepped in, even though initially they refused to represent my case because I was not really public. It was not a sexy case back then.
Right.
Later, I became public, so it became a, you know, good marketing case that they cut. I mean, granted, some of the attorneys did a very good job and I had a good experience during this period, but before the name became famous, they had no interest to represent this case. So the ACLU, with all their 100+ years of experience, they came out and they said, well, this is the most classified case in the entire history of the United States. There has been no woman or man, whether government agencies or from outside the government agencies, who have received as many gag orders and these secrecy classification orders, executive branch orders, as Sybil Edmonds. So that summarizes briefly my case. I'm the so-called most secret and classified and gagged woman in the history of the United States.
Well, and that gag order lasted for many, many years. And could you maybe just clue in folks a little bit about why, you've earned this distinction as the most classified person or most classified woman in U.S. history, but what was it about your case specifically? What was it about what you uncovered that was so dangerous that they had to classify it immediately and invoke the state secret and hush it all up and just shut you down at every turn? What was it about what you uncovered that made this so dangerous that it must be classified at all levels?
Well, I'm so glad you asked this question, and I first have to tell you this. This is the difference between true alternatives versus the mainstream media or the pseudo quasi alternative media out there. People say, well, this case actually received a lot of publicity. I have been on CBS 60 Minutes, CNN, Paul Lazon, Vanity Fair. the Washington Post, New York Times initially when my first book out there. However, it's very interesting. Nobody, not a single reporter went there.
Mm-hmm.
It was never about why they invoked the state secret privilege, secrets privilege on Sybelle Edmonds' case. What is it that the government is so badly want to cover up? Not a single investigative journalist has worked on this aspect of this case today, 11 years later, not one.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's always been, oh, look what government does to poor whistleblowers.
Right, right.
I mean, look at this woman. She's cute, you know, and she was patriotic.
Yeah.
They crucified her, basically. Oh, poor thing. It was a drama. It was this this drama of this woman who wanted to serve her government, and they fired her. And they retaliated against her. And in between those paragraphs, they throw in a few bureaucratic bungling, really inconsequential stuff, even though important, but compared to the rest of the things. So the fact that you ask this question, you would think that is the most logical question,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, right.
When ACLU and all these legal experts come and say, wow, nobody in the United States history has been gagged as many times as this woman. She's the most classified woman.
Right.
Why?
And that's the story, right?
Right.
Right.
So right there's a difference. And even when I tried to tell these people, even though they were not asking me, that would just magically be eliminated from the articles they wrote, mm-hmm. even from my CBS 60 Minutes episode. They filmed for 1 hour, and it was just 10, 15 minutes. And when we come back, I'll tell you what it was.
Perfect. Yeah, we got a lot more to talk about. Stay with us here on Traces of Reality Radio after this break.
Oh, we're the only two Messiah rescues us from ourselves. It's easy to imagine there will be sorrow. Yeah, there will be
All right, we are back to Traces of Reality Radio. I'm your host, Guillermo Jimenez. Thank you for joining me. Again, we are speaking with Ms. Sybelle Edmonds today. And again, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, I would like to make some time here later on in the show to take a few of your phone calls. So if you want to join in on the conversation, feel free to call in at 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. Also, feel free to send me a message on Twitter. That's at Traces of Reality on Facebook. You can find everything on tracesofreality.com. Just before the break, Ms. Edmonds, we were getting into why exactly that gag order was issued to begin with. And you also touched on something that I do want to talk to you about a little bit, and that is the role of the media in your case and in your story, and how you distinguish between mainstream media, alternative media, and then this quasi-alternative media that's not really alternative at all. So I want to touch on that also in a little bit here. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about the gag order. And again, what was so dangerous about what you uncovered that it had to be classified, and that a gag order was not just issued on Sybelle Edmonds, but on the Congress as well?
Sure. There were several aspects into my case. And because I worked for several divisions within the FBI, and because I was the only Turkic language translator, language specialist for the FBI's Washington field office, I worked with counterterrorism divisions from all over the country, FBI's Chicago field office, Los Angeles field office. But I also worked, and this was my main work, with the counterintelligence division of the FBI, and mainly with Washington Field's office. Now, one important aspect of my case dealt with both espionage, but severe political corruption.
Right.
That not only that it bordered, it actually went into severe criminal operations by some of our officials. Meaning what? Meaning there is this thing called FARA. That's the Foreign Agent Registration Act. This act was passed years ago, several decades ago, that said anybody who lobbies or works to lobby with the foreign lobby has to register with the Justice Department, okay? Mm-hmm. And as with all our laws out there, when they create one, they make sure there are about at least a dozen of loopholes where people can go around that particular law, okay? So despite this law, through the counterintelligence information that we've been gathering, the FBI, and this was since 1996, because this particular file dated back to 1996, it was a specific FBI operation, showed that we had at least a dozen of congressional people, okay, and these are high-level, senior elected officials who were engaged in illegal activities. Some of them are against and were against the United States national security and interests right. with foreign factors. And they were getting money, tons of money from these foreign entities, players, through the loophole. And these were not going through straight lobby. First of all, you can't accept money from the foreign lobby. And then the others, you know, pointed to certain people within the executive branch, especially within the State Department, that were actually on the payroll of foreign entities, not only government state actors, but also criminal elements, okay?
Right.
So, but the FBI was prevented from transferring these cases from counterintelligence to criminal or espionage cases, go after them, show this evidence, and prosecute them in court.
Right.
Because, you know, after all, they serve the White House, the executive uh-huh. branch, and the higher-ups within the State Department and the White House were not letting this happen. So you do all this work, you have these agents, the lower-level agents, who are gathering all this evidence, yet you can't take action. You can't put these people in jail where they belong. So that was one aspect of it that they didn't want it to come out. And one of these individuals, the criminal U.S. official, actually his name came out in this Vanity Fair article written in 2005,
yeah.
was at the time the Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert, okay, involved in major heroin operations in Illinois, receiving millions of dollars, both through himself and through his family, from wow. these, a lot of them criminal thugs that were foreign, etc. And the other aspect of my case dealt with the area where the counterintelligence investigation and information gathered under counterintelligence operations converge with some other counterterrorism-related investigations, where we had information gathered from whether diplomatic or other type of foreign entities that we were targeting in the United States, the FBI was targeting, both under FISA but also counterterrorism cases, that showed that our certain agencies, such as the State Department and the CIA, all the way until 9/11 and even 2-3 months past 9/11, they were working with very closely mm-hmm. with the so-called Al-Qaeda terrorists, meaning people such as Ayman Zawahiri or Yasin al-Qadi and at least several Bin Laden family members, businessmen, and that we were together working on various operations in Central Asia, in Caucasus. I mean, these are the very, very resource, energy-rich region.
Exactly.
This is the region that is about to replace the Middle East. So those were the two areas they wanted to cover up and make sure that information would not become public.
Okay, we got to go another break, and we've barely scratched the surface, folks. Stay with us. We have a lot more to discuss with Ms. Sybil Edmonds after this break on Traces of Reality Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Alright, welcome back. This is Traces of Reality Radio. Again, we are speaking with Ms. Sybil Edmonds of Boiling Frogs Post, FBI whistleblower. We do have a longer segment, this segment, so hopefully we will not be interrupted by another commercial break for some time now. I do have a question here from Twitter, from Tesco Value Illuminati had a question, but I believe he just answered it. His question was, could Sibel please clarify the information FBI translators had prior to 9/11 and the timeline as far as that goes, he thought was a little unclear, but I think you just answered that. And if I understood you correctly, it was basically U.S. Involvement with what became known as Al-Qaeda, which was the Mujahideen, which I think you just said was going on years before 9/11 and even months after the attack was still occurring and taking place.
Absolutely.
Right.
At least this particular FBI operation, FBI counterintelligence operation, dealt with the period 1996 till 2000 to January, February. So you're looking at 6 years time period.
Mm-hmm.
And that involved, you know, the various high level meetings between the supposed, they refer to them today as Al-Qaeda. They did not, nobody, I mean, the name Al-Qaeda never ever came up in any of these operations or investigations. They were Mujahideens and our partners in Central Asia Caucasus in relation to what we carried out together. And this is the United States and NATO with Chechens against the Russians on Russian soil, but also in mobilizing, training, militarizing, weaponizing, various Islamic religious sects in areas in Kyrgyzstan, in Tajikistan, and again to arm these people, to train these people, and then to basically have them fight the battles with factions or the segments that were not as cooperative or allies with us in taking over the resources in Central Asia and Caucasus. And, I mean, there are a lot of documents out there. These are public documents that people can go and easily find out and look that shows the extent of our partnership and cooperation and working together with this now called Al-Qaeda members during the Balkan crisis, you know,
right.
Sarajevo, you know, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia back then, you know, Albania, and how many thousands of these Mujahideens with their leaders, with their commandos, you know, like Al-Zawahiri was one of these people. They were facilitated, moved, armed, trained, and brought into the Balkan region. You're looking at the, you're looking at Europe and how they stayed there and how they helped us fight other, sects and segments over there. And again, a lot of people is already known. Everybody knows about the war in Afghanistan against the Soviet in 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
But people are under the assumption, thanks to the mainstream media and a lot of quasi-alternatives, that, okay, that partnership ended. You know, well, the Soviet were, you know, they were defeated in Afghanistan, and then the Berlin Wall came down, and the Soviet Union was dissolved and no longer communist, and boom! He said, okay, guys, no longer we are partners. That was just, you know, the certain alliances for the certain time period. That is not the case, because after that, the competition over the resources, energy resources in Central Asia and Caucasus, you know, what Pepe Escobar refers to as pipelineistan, became our number one goal, both for our military-industrial complex, but are also top oil companies. And basically, who's going to have the upper hand in this region? Is it going to be China? Is it going to be Russia? Or is it going to be us, the West?
Exactly.
And in order to ensure our big chunk of the pie, as we did elsewhere, and we have been doing as the United Kingdom, you know, the British Empire before us were doing, we always like to use radicalization, Islamization, the Islamic segments, and work through that channel to take over regions. That is our modus operandi.
Exactly. And, you know, and not just, you know, destabilizing other regions of the world and operating in that way, but this war on terror is also being used here domestically to drive forward an agenda to bring forth this police state. And that's something I also want to talk to you about, how far we have come in the last decade since 9/11 here domestically. And so I guess just to wrap up what you were talking about, we know what information you uncovered. You know that, you were unable to go public with this information at first, gagged by executive, order, I suppose, by state secrets privilege. And so the question then becomes, Why was this information blocked? Why was it not allowed to go up the chain? And of course the implication is obvious, but I suppose, it would be, helpful to get maybe just, your opinion on why exactly, the information that you uncovered was not allowed to go up the chain. And of course, like I said, the implication is obvious, but just in case anyone out there's sure. Not even connected dots, exactly what was taking place and why do you believe the U.S. government was so intent on gagging you and not letting this information go forward, go public?
Sure. First, they wanted to gag this information from the major official channels, okay?
Right.
For example, they wanted to make sure it wouldn't go forward and it was gagged with Congress, because if we had congressional hearing in this case, I had at the time at least 6 to 8 senior FBI agents and analysts who were going to testify and talk about these issues on their own. The FBI and the FBI's bosses, you know, whether it's White House and not the particular president, because this information that was so explosive took place under 2 administrations. It was
exactly.
Under, most of it actually was under Bill Clinton's administration. So it was not a partisan issue.
Right.
They wanted to prevent that from happening, because then you're looking at a wow, massive case breaking out in public and truly gaining legitimacy. The other place they tried to block, and they blocked successfully, were the courts. If it had gone move forward in courts, I would have deposed dozens of witnesses. Who were going to be these witnesses? There were going to be witnesses such as the number 3 guy in the State Department, a traitor, Mark Grossman. At the time, it was Richard Perr, and it was, you know, Paul Wolfowitz. There were Douglas Feist. I mean, we had major people in our legal battle that my attorneys had prepared. These are the people we are going to depose. They didn't want this to go, and also the allies, meaning the good FBI agents at the time and analysts and experts who were going to come and testify.
Yeah.
So they prevented that. And of course, with mainstream media, it was very easy for them to make sure that the real information was blacked out.
Right.
Other than that, everybody knows, man, I've been talking. I've been talking, you know, with you. I have been talking with small alternative media outlets. And you know what? The government really couldn't care less about it.
Yeah.
Really, they don't. It doesn't bother them. And especially at this point. Now, if this would have happened 8 years ago, 10 years ago, I was talking like this, I had a chance to get into big time trouble, because it was new and people had not been boiled as much
exactly.
as you and I discussed this.
Right.
But today, you know what? They are looking, saying, well, millions and millions. Everybody found out about NSA's illegal eavesdropping of all Americans' communications.
Right.
What
right.
happened? Nada.
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
Exactly.
People found out about our black sites and rampant torture cases. All those pictures from Abu Ghraib came out, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Also the stuff with Bagram prison, and all this, the fact that we have been jailing a lot of these innocent people in Guantanamo, right?
Right.
All that information came out. What happened? Nada. Nothing. So now they're very comfortable. You can, in fact, I believe you can take the most information, far more explosive than the Pentagon paper at the time was, make it public, okay? And yes, it will be sensation for a couple of days. It will be the
right.
most talked about topics out after Kardashian and rest of them on the blogs. And
sadly, right.
It would go away, and then they would say, okay, it's old story. Give us some more scandals. As if people have had so many scandals that they couldn't care less anymore. There is no reaction. You see this general dumbness and numbness when it comes to massive issues that are being exposed right and left before our eyes.
Yeah,
you know?
You're absolutely right. And in fact, I opened the program talking about how unreal it is to think back, 10 years ago when, as you just said, torture was a major scandal. Abu Ghraib was a major scandal. I'm personally not still over the Patriot Act, you know, and that's not really discussed anymore. The Patriot Act's not really discussed. Illegal invasions of foreign countries is not really discussed, because we have even more scandalous, more outrageous things going on today that we turn our attention to. And sadly, we have, it's accelerating at a pace where it's difficult to keep up with it, from our end. And at the same time, it's accelerating at such a pace where the public in mass is able to become accustomed to it. Slowly
Absolutely.
Boiling.
It has become the way of life.
Exactly.
If they say, what is, you know, that's one of the things that George W. Bush said during the first year after 9/11. He said, well, these terrorists, you know what they hate? They hate our way of life. And that's one thing he was, it's like, well, you know what? Our way of life completely changed and has been changing so fast. You know, we, with the police state, really official, big time, the most dangerous police state, governing our way of life today. And Al Qaeda or some Mujahideen or some bearded guy in his shalwars in the, inside some cave didn't do that. It was our government that changed our way of life. In a way, you would then sit and wait and look and think and say, this must have been the certain people's wet dream. And this is 9/11 and people being driven by this fear, this very, very illogical fear factor and say, okay, give it more. It's okay. You're saying terrorists out there, this is going to protect us. Do it more. It was a wet dream for certain people. And you have to look very closely and see whose wet dream really it was and who won in this scenario.
Exactly.
And you won't see Bin Laden or those guys in their shalwars in the cave in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. What did they gain? Nothing. But if you look at the military industrial complex and say, oh man, after the fall of the Soviet Union, what was going to happen to these guys with trillions of dollars business? I mean, you were going to have the surplus inventories because we didn't have this any big wars, this imaginary enemy or blown up enemy to fight against, you know, before it was Cold War for 30, 40 years. Now that has been removed. Now we're going to have far less reason to buy from Northrop Grumman and the rest of them. And imagine these trillions of dollar industry, what kind of intimidation they face. Now, thanks to 9/11, we replaced that with a war. Unlike Cold War, it's really impossible to ever end. There are no Berlin walls to come down. Supposedly, there is this Al-Qaeda. They are invisible. They are all over the globe. Can you imagine a day like when the Cold War ended? We would say, okay, today we defeated the last terrorist on planet Earth. We are going to get rid of the TSA. We are going to get rid of the Patriot Act. As of today, we consider it expired. No more terrorists left on the globe. Can you imagine that? Well, that is the wet dream for the military-industrial complex.
Exactly.
Then, of course, with all the bases we opened up in Central Asia Caucasus under the guise of 9/11 and terrorism, whether it was the Manas Air Base in Kyrgyzstan or, you know, getting and forcing Azerbaijan to become a member of NATO and Azerbaijan on the Caspian Sea. So oil businesses' wet dream. Mm-hmm. Of course, the financial institutions' wet dream goes along with the two. And then you're looking at governments, the government's biggest wet dream, as the biggest winner. You know, if you look at government programs, have you ever seen a government department or program that actually expired and say, okay, this was the Great Depression, we put all these programs in place, and now that economy is good, we're going to get rid of them. No. Once you expand the government, once you have a Department of Homeland Security and TSA and God, dozens of other agencies created after 9/11, they are there to stay forever.
Exactly.
Okay. You're looking at millions of jobs depending on it. Okay. You're looking at billions and billions and tens of billions of dollars being spent upon it and collected and put in it. So, these are the things that you are not going to see disappear. Even if they say, well, we eliminated the last terrorist on the planet Earth. It's not going to happen. So basically, government has been one of the biggest, biggest, biggest winner of 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Truly, it has been.
No, I think it's an excellent point. You know, the quote from John Adams comes to mind. You know, liberty once lost is lost forever. Unless the people do something to take it back. As you just mentioned, government will never willingly give you back these liberties that they've worked so hard to take away. And there's more than one reason for that. As you just mentioned, there's jobs at stake, and this apparatus that's been, established over the past decade as well. Not just the fact that government has gained more and more control, which they're happy to have and not so happy to give back. Something else that I want to highlight that you've said, is you've called this the America presently today, 2013, the worst police state, in the world, possibly in history. I'm not sure. I don't want to misquote you, but
no, you're absolutely right.
But
this
it's very, very interesting because, I've gotten criticized for calling this a police state or for acknowledging tyranny when I see it all around me, because people get, you know, a little turned off by those words, a police state, tyranny, right? You know, that, are you out of your mind? Tyranny, this is not tyranny. You know, the 1940s in Germany, that's tyranny, and it's very clear and it's very, obvious, and they can identify it and they can grasp it. But tyranny today, as you mentioned, is the worst possible police state. To believe that you are free and to be completely enslaved, I think you're absolutely right on target with that observation.
It is, because I have lived under tyrannical governments. I have lived in Turkey after the military coup, when U.S. actually installed the military regime and we had the curfews and all the stuff in Turkey in 1981. I've lived in Iran both under Shah, a big time tyrannical regime, and then I lived in Iran under the current regime, the Islamic regime, tyrannical. I lived in Azerbaijan during the Soviet era. And that was the communism tyranny. So I have lived under various police state regimes, and now I live under one. First of all, I know how to recognize one because I have experience living under police regimes.
Right.
So when people come and say, you're being cynical and radical and this is being a drama queen, yeah, we've been losing some of our civil liberties, a little nibble here and nibble there, but it's not a police state yet. And I don't know what they are waiting for. But the other thing that is really worth mentioning is, it was far less dangerous during those regimes or in those regimes with people knowing that they lived under police state. Nobody denied.
Right.
Everybody was saying, you know, we have to do something. We are living under the police state. Well, in the United States today, 90%+ they say, what police state?
Absolutely.
They are just trying to keep us safe. So that makes it far more dangerous. The other thing that makes it the most dangerous police state in the mankind history is the fact that it's paired up and it's coupled with this incredibly scary use of technology. And that is, again, you see it with the NSA's illegal eavesdropping.
Right.
You see it with the unbelievable Orwellian drone project.
Exactly.
I mean, you see actually all around you.
I want to pick it up right there. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the next topic in conversation I wanted to get into with you. We have a lot more to talk about, guys. Stay with us. Traces of Reality Radio on the way back after this break. Alright, we are back. This is Traces of Reality Radio. I am Guillermo Jimenez. I am here joined by Sibel Edmonds, and we're getting into some great conversations here on the current state of the police state, really, in this country. And Sibel, you know, we're coming close to the end of the first hour. Would you be able to stay with us for a few more minutes in the second hour? So I feel like we're just getting warmed up.
Oh, absolutely. Likewise here.
Okay,
I'm totally
excellent.
Warmed up. I'm fired up.
Excellent. You know, and we touched on a few things that I want to come back to, before we had to break for that last commercial. We're talking about, of course, the police state they live under, the most dangerous, police state in history. As you mentioned, because most people, 90% of the public, believes that, you know, we're perfectly okay. This is just fine. This is wonderful. We're living in a free country after all. And they're still under that illusion and they don't want to see the reality for what it is. Something else I want to touch on though is the role of the media in this. The mainstream media in particular, seem all too willing or eager almost to soothe and massage the concerns of most Americans who, when they do have a thought and that comes to their head, about, hey, maybe we shouldn't be targeting, people for assassination who are U.S. citizens. Maybe we shouldn't have drones, bombing, Yemen and Somalia. But the MSNBC and the like, will come on, the talking heads will come on and say, no, don't worry. We need to do these things. And they're all too quick to do that. Could you talk a bit about the role of the media? Also, how you distinguish between mainstream, alternative, and quasi-alternative. And feel free to call anyone out by name if you'd like.
Oh, absolutely. I will do that. With the mainstream media, one of the things I tell people is, imagine, I mean, just think about the latest incident, the Sandy Hook incident, okay?
Yeah.
And think if the media does exactly the same propaganda, same thing, okay, the same coverage, the same production with drama, with our wars, okay, and the use of drones. During the Vietnam War, at least one of the things we had once in a while, and it had a very big impact, it were some of those really horrifying, brutal pictures that came out of the war that also really colored people's reactions or opinion of the war. I mean, there are, if you go and look at some of the galleries of pictures of Vietnam War era, you will see some incredible photographs depicted and taken and then here published by the journalists and the mainstream media. Now I ask Americans, we have been in so many wars, okay, some of them covert, some of them overt. Now even the covert ones are overt because now everybody knows about it. It's not a secret any longer, whether in Somalia or in Yemen. Have we had any TV channel, including CNN and NBC, showing any of these fried babies, okay? Right. I mean, I lived under wars, you know. My father, he was a surgeon. He took me actually to the hospital and showed me children that were burned crisp. And I was 11 years old. Maybe today in the U.S. that would be considered a type of a child abuse.
Right.
But with my dad, it was to help me form my anti-war opinion. Have we had that from the mainstream media?
Absolutely. We're just getting warmed up here, folks. Like we said, we got a lot more to talk about. We'll be back with the second hour of Traces of Reality Radio with Sabelle Edmonds as our guest. Stay tuned right here on RBN after this short break.
And it's raining ice picks on your steel shore. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run. When the forest burns along the road, like God's eyes and my headlights, when the dogs are looking for their bones, and it's raining ice picks on your steel shore. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run.
Hello everyone and welcome back to hour number two of Traces of Reality Radio. I am your host, Guillermo Jimenez. I am joined today by Ms. Sabelle Edmonds. Classified Woman is the name of her book, her memoir. Also the founder and publisher of Boiling Frogs Post, FBI whistleblower. We are talking about a variety of topics this afternoon. Before we had to break for that last commercial, we were interrupted again by a commercial break. I do want you to finish that thought, Ms. Edmonds, on the role of the media. And again, how you distinguish between these different media sources and how we should be very careful in the way we get our information, in particular discerning in the way we get information from so-called alternative media sources, which are actually anything but, are alternative only in that they're not owned by maybe Fox or ABC or something like that, but are still beholden to corporate entities or do not really delve into the issues as deeply as they should.
Sure, and with the mainstream media, I think by now it should be pretty obvious to almost everyone, but unfortunately, as you know, we have this very small percentage of people who are truly awake, and we refer to them as the irate minority, but they have been acting as the extension of the United States government. I mean, number one, they are backed by the corporations, the big corporations. Number two, well, the big corporations, they are in bed with the government, and therefore the mainstream media has been very happily acting as the extension of the United States government. And one of the things as an organization we face daily is people coming, these are the people who are considering, you know, blowing the whistle and put out some important information, not classified information that jeopardizes our national security or anything, but government criminal conduct, extreme government waste, fraud, abuse cases. And they come to us and they ask, they say, well, who should I trust? Who do I go to? Like New York Times, Washington Post, you know, look at all those mainstream media.
Right.
Channels. And our answer to them, our response is no. Don't do that. And I always give them the example. For example, one whistleblower, famous whistleblower, this was the AT&T that was Mark Klein whistleblower. He took all the documents and information and he went to the LA Times. Okay. He gave the information to the reporter. The reporter in LA Times went to his editor. The editor immediately contacted the NSA, reported Mark Klein. They sat on this story for 6 months. They didn't publish it, okay?
Right.
However, he got into trouble because LA Times, they admit, they said, well, we have to check the story with the NSA sources. Meaning what? You go and you expose this whistleblower instead of protecting him? Well, what happened with the New York Times? They got the story on all this illegal eavesdropping of all Americans. They sat on it over a year, and they made sure it came out after the election results were out. This is the state of the mainstream media, okay?
Yeah.
Some people may be under this illusion of Washington Post. Yeah, they had this, you know, Bob Woodward.
Right.
And that doesn't exist. Now, as far as the pseudo alternative media that I refer to, and that is very similar to also NGOs, this big industry called the non-governmental agencies out
right.
there, organizations. And I dealt with them a lot during the...
Oh, we got another commercial break coming up. I'm sorry about this, but we always get short breaks. That's good. We'll be right back after this short break. Come back and join us with more with Sibel Edmonds on Traces of Reality Radio. Alright, we are back. This is Traces of Reality Radio, again joined by Sibel Edmonds of Boiling Frogs Post. I do apologize for that, Ms. Edmonds. We got interrupted by that last break. It kind of snuck up on us, that last one.
I gotta talk faster.
No, it's quite alright. We're talking about the role of media, and I guess to ask you, specifically, there was an issue that, you've raised recently in an interview that I was listening to, recently. And that is that during the Bush years, media seemed all, you know, very willing to hear your story, and it was, you know, a sexy, scandalous story, and you were, you know, being interviewed on mainstream media sources and also, you know, these quasi alternative media sources as well. But now, given the current political climate, we got a Democrat in office and things like this, that has changed. And I maybe you can touch on that briefly.
Yes, tremendous.
Right.
And I would include even the blogosphere activism into that. And it's amazing because
right.
although there were, you know, people who were ignoring the case from the right, from the more Republican right wing side, I really didn't ever come under a particular attack, you know, personality attacks or anything. And it was mainly support. As soon as the administration changed and as soon as my website, I started criticizing the Obama administration and calling him the far worst president. In fact, the worst president in the history of the United States when it comes to truth telling,
yeah.
whistleblowers, transparency. It was amazing to observe the change. The most vicious attacks to date I have received, they have come from the so-called left. In fact, I was never one of those people with free time to go and just keep blogging. I'm a full-time mother. I cook full-time. I have two works that I do from home. And, of course, running my website. But even places like Democratic Underground, Daily Coast, they actually banned me. They called me a radical. They said I should just shut up and limit myself to my information and the Bush administration and not even go there with the Obama administration. And the other big thing I always tell people to look into and to look for is who are these people are funded. And if you see George Soros giving over $50 million sponsoring some of these so-called alternative media outlets,
right,
ask yourself why. Why in the world George Soros, with such a golden heart, would want to finance these organizations? You would see a Rockefeller Foundation. I mean, you're looking at the same corporations with what they call, they set up and they call foundations. And basically, they are getting their bread and money and everything from these entities. And they are under these people's thumb. And especially when you add the partisan element, well, we know who George Soros supported and how much money he poured into Obama's campaign.
Right.
What do you expect from the so-called alternative media that is being funded by individuals such as George Soros or corporations alike? And that's the first question people should ask and look into. And once they see the sources of income, then they got to decide and say, so am I going to consider this outlet an alternative? Well, they are not alternative.
Right. You know, you follow the money and who benefits. And I think if you do those two things, when you examine any bit of information, any news source, any story, if you ask yourself, you know, where is the money coming from and who benefits from this, I think you get to the root of most of these issues. This leads me to my next question that I had for you. And that's, you know, the idea that there are people out there still, as you mentioned earlier, the majority of people, 90% of people who accept, or only accept the official narrative of events. And you know, say, you know, they say things like, oh, you know, if any of this were true, you know, if 9/11 was an inside job, or if there were more than just one gunman, if there was more than just a lone gunman, or someone would speak out, you know, these secrets like this just cannot be kept. How would you address people like that when they pose questions like this?
Well, I mean, can you repeat that question again?
Sure,
because
sure.
I can read it two different ways. Go ahead.
Well, what I mean is, you know, again, there's folks who say, you know, if any of this were true. So, for example, if any the events that we've talked about with 9/11 and the cover up and things like this, if any of that was true, then there would be more people out there willing to speak out and not keep it secret. So could you address how difficult it is, first of all, to come out with this information, how the administration, especially this one, makes it so difficult for whistleblowers, and then perhaps the role of the media in suppressing this information?
Absolutely. Because as I mentioned before, the so-called channels that the system, including the mainstream media, refers to, the whistleblowers are protected under Whistleblower Protection Act. First of all, if you go and look at these all sorts of crummy legislation under Whistleblowers Protection Act, you will see that it explicitly excludes agencies such as the FBI, CIA, the Justice Department, the TSA, all the stuff that deals with intelligence, defense, and law enforcement. They're all excluded. And even the ones that are under protection cover, that protection is just an illusion. There's nothing protective about it. So the channels within Congress, they don't exist. That's not Inspector General's office. Well, they have the same bosses that they are trying to suffocate this information. Mainstream media, we refer to, and then we have dozens and dozens of NGOs posing as whistleblowers related organizations funded by the Rockefeller, brought to you by George Soros. And so we have all the stuff. And the biggest thing and the biggest deterrent, the biggest letdown for whistleblowers, whether it's me or if it's some of the known whistleblowers such as the NSA whistleblower Thomas Drake, has been the public apathy. And I can't tell you how defeating, how awful that is, because you feel like, okay, I'm going to gather the courage and I'm going to say, even if they're going to come after me, even though I'm going to lose my job, I'm going to do it for my country. I'm going to do it for my constitution. You come out and you put it all out there, okay, risking everything. Some of these people risk jail time. And as we see, the worst president in the history of the United States, that's what he's been doing exactly to deter whistleblowing. They do that. In the end, you look at these people, nothing. I mean, for the Supreme Court, for the court that actually they closed the court hearing in my case, even though it was put out there the date, less than a dozen of people showed up, only two alternative media, and there were no mainstream media. This was when three judges from the appellate court, federal appellate court, they said all the public, the newspaper people, everyone had to get out of the court because the court case and Sybelle Edmonds case was going to be all closed hearings, okay? Nobody there covered. So it was not like, oh, being in the spotlight, but it is that it doesn't make any difference. And that is the biggest deterrence for the whistleblowers.
Right.
On one hand, you know, people expect these people that have just lost their jobs as whistleblowers. I mean, there are no attorneys to represent these people. As I said, the ACLU, until my case became a little bit sexy, they couldn't care less about my case, okay?
Yeah.
And the other attorneys out there, they said, well, I charge $375 per hour, and my assistant
right.
charges $200. And I'm like, oh, my God. I incurred about $184,600
wow.
in legal fees, and I got a second mortgage in my house, okay?
Wow.
But as you say, what good really came out of it? I really can't point to anything, and I was hoping that this would be an example and other people would be encouraged
right,
to
exactly.
do that.
Yeah.
But I tell you, if you were to ask for my personal opinion, what has been the biggest slap, the hardest thing to deal with, I would tell you straightforward, the biggest thing to deal with has been, the hardest thing to deal with has been public apathy.
Absolutely. And that, I think that's hitting right at the heart of the issue. As we talked about before, just this, the fact that most people today are also willing to accept these things. And when these things come out, you know, they're, as you mentioned, they're sexy, they're scandalous, they're explosive for a minute in the grand scheme of things. And then it just fades away and people go back to their reality TV or their video games or whatever it might be and disassociate themselves from reality again. And there, we do not see the type of outcry that you would expect, the type of outcry that happens in most other places of the world. And I'm curious about what you think is the reason for that. Are we just so comfortable, so complacent? Is it the fact that relative to other parts of the world, Americans are much more comfortable, I suppose, and rattling out of that comfort zone? It seems like it's going to require something extremely. I mean, I think so many
factors are in play here. All of the above that you mentioned, but even more than that, and I believe some of that, again, some people may call it a conspiracy theory or cynical, is a systemic conditioning, okay?
Right.
Systemic and systematic conditioning by the government, by the powers being. And it starts at an early age, you know, even with our school system here, how we teach our students, how we expect the knowledge to translate into grades with these multiple choice, you know, it says, okay, Watergate, A, B, C, D. You can't say C, however, or 9/11, A, B, C, D. You can say B, however. You can't say put but. You can't put however.
Right.
There's just one answer, and that's the official narrative. Same thing with the TV and conditioning and making people so lazy and dumb and numb. I mean, look, all our kids are at 70% are some sort of antipsychotic drugs
right.
or on ADHD. We have a new made-up disease, and some, for some reason, suddenly over 50% of our kids are inflicted with this disease, with this made-up disease. And then you also look at it. I mean, even our sitcoms that even the dumbest people should understand, and I hope people don't feel insulted hearing this, we have to put the autoprompter, okay? Ha, 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 ha. It's time for me to laugh, so I'm going
right.
to laugh.
Right.
So maybe for our radio shows, we have to just pause and put an autoprompter saying, think,
exactly.
okay, and get outrage.
I was
okay?
thinking that exact same thing, right?
Without autoprompters, our people don't respond. Our people are zombie-like, unfortunately.
Yeah.
They are overly medicated. They mm-hmm. are overly, I mean, they are desensitized. And that's
and
the part
to be,
that
they need to be cued. It's, if you need a cue, folks, it's time to be outraged. It is that time now. We have our phone lines are lit up. I do want to make some time for your calls. Come right back and join us at the, after this break on Traces of Reality Radio. All right, we are back. Traces of Reality Radio with Guillermo Jimenez. Thank you for joining me again. I'm joined today by Sabelle Edmonds of Boiling Frogs Post. Also, again, author of the memoirs, A Classified Woman. Like I said earlier, I do want to make time to take your calls, but we are kind of running a little short on time, so I'm going to ask callers today to please be as brief and as direct with your questions as possible, so we can try to get to as many of your calls as we can. I'm going to go ahead and take them in the order that we receive. So we have Jerry in Chicago. Go ahead, Jerry.
Good evening, Guillermo and Seville. I'm very happy to talk to Seville. I have a question for you.
Hi, Jerry.
This Sandy Hook thing, and before that it was the Sick Mosque in Wisconsin, and before that it was Aurora, that was all the push for gun control, and this is, you were explaining that earlier. When they have one of these false flag deals, it's usually meant to be an agenda push to get more government control and legislation over us. There was an FBI agent, and he had quit, and he got his job in the Twin Towers the same day they fell as a security agent. Did you happen to know him?
No, I didn't, but I have done research. I have read a lot of analysis and articles on that. I believe his name was Agent John O'Neill, correct?
That is correct, John O'Neill. And, I mean, he was fed up with the FBI, and I'm just wondering, when you left there, how many of them were on the bad side, or did they even know that they were doing things on the bad side?
Sure. And that's one of the things. I'm glad this question is asked because, you know, it's very easy to refer to these as like agency, FBI and the Despicable People, etc. Now, with CIA, I can see it because the whole agency, I think that agency needs to be eliminated. I'm one of those people who have been advocating for the elimination of that criminal organization. But with the FBI, all the agents that I worked with, and these were the counterintelligence, counterterrorism agents, these are the guys, the street-level guys doing the work. I know, I mean, I'm so into this fighting the police state, and I'm so against all this FBI national security letters, all the butcherings of the Constitution, but I want to remind people that none of these agents that I worked with had that mindset, that mentality, and they were as frustrated and as disgusted and as angry as I was with the system, how the White House or the State Department was pushing the executive level people. You had the biggest corruptions up there within the director and the two tiers under him. I mean, it's really hierarchical organization with lots of titles and abbreviation. And it's funny because one of the dirty guys I dealt with, his title was DEAD, dead. Oh, it was Deputy Executive Agency, blah, blah. But those were the people who were engaged in the massive cover-up and wrongdoing, not the agents, the street-level agents, who were actually, frankly, they were trying their best, trying to figure out what happened on 9/11 and trying to prevent another possible attacks. And they were either left in the dark in a lot of cases, or they knew a lot of things, but they were afraid to blow the whistle because of, you know, like the agent I worked under, Dennis Stasher, he had two girls, 3 years old, 5 years old, his wife didn't work, he had put 14 years into the agency, and he's like, they will destroy my life, and he saw basically what they did destroy my life to a certain degree, and he, plus, maybe in a way he was more mature than I was, less green, because he said, who are you going to go to, Seville? You're going to go to Congress, the same corrupt people that are under FBI monitoring? Right. You know, the same guys who are involved in this? Really, who are you going to go to? And that becomes the most important thing. But I want to make sure that the bit, you know, that the whole agency is not the agency, the institution, but a lot of good agents were working there, and a lot of awful stuff happened in that top tier. They are the ones with knowledge and cover up, et cetera.
Absolutely.
Director and deputy directors.
Yeah, great point and great question, Jerry. Thank you. I really appreciate your call. And I think that's probably true of most agencies. Wouldn't you say, Seville?
Except for the CIA.
I think you're right.
I have to point this out. I have had CIA so-called whistleblowers, and there's one thing to talk about analysts. They're like accountants, you know, they are the desk guys. They sit there, they do basically analysis. However, when you look at the operatives, there are criteria to hire these guys. And when you look at the criteria, you see that these criteria are to be notorious criminals. Mm-hmm. So if you're not working for the CIA, you're either a serial killer or a serial rapist or a con artist or a successful charlatan. You have to be a pathologic liar to become an operative, okay? You have to be able to lie very easily. Mm-hmm. You have to have a weak conscience. These are actually the official requirements for you to become an operative.
Oh, sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
Become a... So that tells you something. So on one hand, I say eliminate this agency. On the other hand, if we did, you're going to see the increased rate in our serial rapist and killing crime here in the United States, because all these guys are going to be operating here. And man, yeah, that's going to be scary.
They're going to be unemployed and in the streets, right? Oh, wow. You know, and that's a great point. I mean, these people that are selected for these type of agencies, the CIA in particular, I mean, they're highly vetted. And it's a very particular, as you just mentioned, very particular personality type that they look for. Not just anybody becomes a CIA spook, folks. I mean, these guys are picked for a reason. A very particular psychology within these individuals that allows them to do the things that they do. I mean, they're professional assassins for crying out loud. We have more of your calls, more with Sibel Edmonds. We got a short break and a longer segment coming up with more time. Stay with us here on Traces of Reality Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Alright, we are back. It's Traces of Reality Radio. Thank you so much for sticking with us. And, thank you, Ms. Edmonds, for sticking with me. We've already kept you here, much longer than we had anticipated. So I really, really appreciate you, taking the time, to talk to us and take a few of our questions here from our listeners. I really do appreciate that very much.
Actually, I like answering questions, because that gives me a chance to find out what people are thinking or what kind of questions they have. So this is fun.
Excellent, excellent. So let's get to it then. We have a lot of callers on the line. Again, I'm going to ask that you please be as brief and as direct as you can with your questions or comments, so we can get to as many of you as possible. If you're still on the line, Bill, go ahead, in Idaho.
Thank you, sir. Thanks so very much. I'm hoping that the audience that's trying to pick up his jaw off the floor listening to this young lady understands and appreciates that the broadcast and the radio station need support, as well as the sponsors, and so they make sure that they actively participate. If nothing else, send a check. Considering that Ari North was the original modeler, and his profile came up congressional hearings, he was the first one that publicly mentioned Osama bin Laden. And considering your apt observations in regard to the congressional military-industrial complex, which Mr. Eisenhower put in place, could you advise me in regard to, Henry Clown and the implications of the media being owned by General Dynamics? And I had a quick follow-on, if you would. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, that would be my personal opinion based on the experience I went through and all the research I have done, not anything particular to GD through my work within the FBI. But another thing that I also ask people to look into is, when you look at, you know, when I said there were a lot of numbers of U.S. officials, both elected and appointed within the State Department, within the Pentagon, who were involved in the operations that actually were criminal. I mean, it went beyond corruptions. And if you look at those people, and then you see once they leave their jobs, okay, either they retire or they resign earlier, you look and see where they end up. They end up with really cushy positions with millions and millions and millions of dollars from the same industry, and mainly the military-industrial complex. For example, their names became very well known during the Bush administration. Now, the same kind of people today under Obama administration, they won't be as famous because, hey, they are Democrats, they are liberal, supposedly. But, you know, people like the names like Richard Pearl, Douglas Feig, you know, all those people that are Richard Armitage. Look at the positions they hold and the companies they are in. So you see that these people, whether it's Dick Cheney or these guys, they are not the top tiers. They are still answerable to the powers beyond that, above that. This is what some people refer to as the shadow government, the deep state. Well, when you look at the player, the deep state, all you have to do, if you want to see who they are, see where these people end up. The ones that be evilized and say, these evils do it. Well, these evils have bosses too. And you have to go up the ladder, up the chain to see who are the real operators, because it's definitely not some presidents. They are puppets, whether it's George W. Bush or if it's Obama. They are just the front face, the puppets. They are removed by at least 3 degrees. You want to see the real operators, keep following the chain, and you're going to keep ending up with the same top tiers. And again, my partner, James Corbett, has been preparing some really good documentaries and video reports on this, on all these not really so secret societies and organizations and people. And who are they made up? They are just, you look at military-industrial complex, financial institutions, and the oil.
He's saying that AI PAC is severely opposing the current CIA nominee in light of Mr. McCain, who almost independently sank the Saratoga. I was wondering if you could advise me in light of those situations, and Joby Warwick's excellent work any more than Peter Lance, if you would have a chance that you would be on with John Connell, RBN, at night, so that people in the drive actually get a chance during the week to hear your excellent observations. But considering Bibi Netanyahu ran Bush's as well as was having Rafi Eitan cover for this Pollard release, do you not think that the higher ups are putting Mother Israel and the good Jews? Obviously, there would be those that would say they were Jews and ultimately are not, as our Lord warned us. Do you think that, Bibi Netanyahu, as well as the AI PAC, Congressional Industrial Complex, is putting Israel at great risk, considering Agent X out of Australia is now not available for comment, and the discussion constantly that we're concerned for our militant people and our own people within agency to understand is ultimately out of the testimony of the good physicist Andrei Sakharov. They always eat their own.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Bill. I don't know, Sibel, you want to take that? I'm struggling there's a little trouble with your audio, Bill, and I was trying to find a question in that.
Agent X out of
Agent
Australia,
X.
X, okay. Haganah Mossad, that was extradited, and he's no longer available for comment unless
okay,
it's another NPR push.
Gotcha. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for your call. Sibel, do you want to take that? Are you familiar with this Agent X out of Australia?
I'm reporting in our nightly news. I cannot add any enlightening answer or information. I'm following that story very closely, like many of most of your listeners. So I really don't have additional comments on that. I really have to watch it unfold and find out more myself. So I not within my expertise or current knowledge here.
Gotcha. Well, they can always go check out Boiling Frogs Post and get the latest on that. So thanks again, Bill, for your call. And again, please try to be as direct as you possibly can today with your questions, folks. We do want to get to as many as you can, as we can, rather. We have a few more calls on the line. I do want to spend this segment doing that, since this is the longer segment and we won't have time otherwise. But again, please be as direct as you can with your questions. We have another caller on the line, Richard in Alabama. Please go ahead.
Ms. Edmonds, is it possible that the information that you were assigned to translate was staged in order to create an impression in your mind that the government was incredibly incompetent in allowing Arabs with box cutters to enter the country, and thereby making you an excellent interview for 60 Minutes, to reinforce the idea that Arabs with box cutters hijacked airliners and thereby helping the government.
Well, one of the things that took place when I first went to Congress and I was dealing inside the SCIF. SCIF is this compartmentalized room where nobody can have bugs in, and I don't believe they any longer exist with the technology is today. That means you can go and talk about all sorts of classified information and give that information to people with clearance in this room that nobody can come and put wiretap on. Anyhow, one of the first thing they wanted to do, and this was the congressional offices, Senator Grassley and Senator Leahy's office, and a few people from the intelligence committee, were that, okay, possibly, you know, some of these things that we found out in the FBI, we were prevented from investigating any further, involving the officials, both elected and some of them appointed, criminal operations, espionage operations, where maybe these people were double spies. Maybe the U.S. government knew it, and they, and one of the first thing they had to do, these congressional offices, they had to make sure that was not the case before they moved forward. And in order to do that, they held several meetings with high-level people from several agencies and made sure that this was not the case that was either a stage or it was a case of double spies, the double agents, et cetera, like, for example, with Dickerson's case. So that's as much as I can tell you. As far as CBS 60 Minutes, as I said, that recording took about an hour. They cherry-picked, and as you said, they staged it. I ended up actually receiving, even though I've been married for 22 years, all those marriage offers, because I was this cute damsel in distress, you know, come and rescue me. I had, you know, they fired, look at this petite little woman, they fired her, and they went and they picked, cherry picked couple of, cases of incompetence or, you know, departmental competitions to get more budgets for the departments, and that's all they aired. Even though by the time of airing, the Ashcroft, department, John Ashcroft had already invoked the state secrets privilege, CBS 60 Minutes didn't go into that. They didn't say that one of the involved targets, Major Douglas Dickerson, was actually working for Richard Pearl and Douglas Fide, and his connection to AIPAC and ATC, the American Turkish Council, that ended up being such a, I mean, it was a horrible episode. They didn't lie, but all they had to do was put together, as I said, mainstream media can really shape the public opinion.
Absolutely.
They can even get a true story, but make it and twist it in such a way that would not give the, you know, it won't tell the story. And that's exactly what they're good at doing.
And that's exactly what they did with your story, at least attempted to, initially, the mainstream media, by shaping your story, making it about the gag order, making it about being the most classified woman. Making it about these things rather than what you actually uncover.
Right. It's like, why in the world the U.S. government would go out of their ways, like they have never done ever in the history, to gag and classify and keep this information hidden? No, nobody wanted to know what that information
exactly.
was. That was irrelevant.
Right. Well, thanks, Richard. Thank you for your call. And I'll move right along here. And I'm sure, you know, that's the first time I hear that question posed, but I'm sure that's a question that's probably come across you before, Sibel. That's the idea of possibly being this stuff that you maybe uncovered being planted. But I think you're fairly confident that information was legitimate.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
And another thing I always emphasize is that, you know, the department and what I did in no way got into all the stuff with the hijackers, like those supposed hijackers. I don't know anything about those guys, any of those. Those were 9/11 actors, or they are saying they were. I don't know anything about that segment of 9/11.
Gotcha.
I have zero knowledge.
Gotcha. Okay, excellent. Well, we have time for one last phone call, I think. One last caller. We have Selena in Texas. Go ahead, Selena.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I just want to first off start by saying thank you, Ms. Edmonds, for coming forward the way you did and for the work you've done since.
Thank you.
Considering your situation, that of Bradley Manning, was a former NSA agent, Thomas Drake, who's now in court fighting against the NDAA. What do you see happening in the near future? Do you believe whistleblowers will continue to come forward, even though we have something like the NDAA?
That's a very good question. That's an excellent question, and I'm afraid I'm going to give a very pessimistic answer. People are going to call it pessimistic. I'm going to call it realistic.
Yeah.
Because I already have seen what's been happening, even with the numbers of whistleblowers coming forward. During the first 4 or 5 years after 9/11, we had so many whistleblowers. I mean, even just the ones coming to us, National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. And they were from various agencies. We had DEA agents, you know, from drug enforcement agencies, TSA. They were formerly FAA people, Pentagon. And I can tell you, it has basically narrowed nothing. Nothing, because you see, you gotta put yourself in these people's shoes, okay? They are sitting, and they're sitting on a piece of explosive information. They believe it's either constitutional, crime against constitution, crime against Americans' liberties, or are big time, you know, corruption. They have this information, and they have been watching, right? Because they want to know, what is the best way for me to make this information public? How can I do my job as someone whose loyalty is to the Constitution and to the American people and not a particular agency boss or a mob boss, whether it's Obama or it's Bush? And they look around and they see what happens. They are looking at Thomas Drake's case. They are looking at my case. They are looking at all the real whistleblowers. We have had some pseudo whistleblowers, by the way.
Right.
If you look at them, you know, you see that now currently they get some good cushy contract jobs, especially with the partisan one.
Yeah,
you know, we had the case with Joseph Wilson, and now they're rolling in millions and millions of dollars.
Great point.
It has never happened with real whistleblowers. But as you see, there is no channel within Congress. They know. Look at Congress. Have you seen this particular Congress in the past 11 years hold a real hearing or hold anyone accountable, even one person? None, right? Zero. The answer is zero.
Absolutely.
They are looking at the federal courts, right? Look at all the decisions that have been coming out of that called the Supreme Court. Nothing.
Wow.
There hasn't been anything favorable towards transparency or Americans' constitutional rights. So they see the courts, they see the Congress, they see the mainstream media. Well, they see what happens, whether they're legit or not, places like Wikipedia. They see no channel. They don't know what to do. And they don't do anything. And I believe you're going to see less and less people, unfortunately. And with the lack of public reaction, how many people have really been outraged or have stood up for people like Bradley Manning or Thomas Drake? And with paired up with that, you know what they say? I talk to people who have been, they're like, you know what? I mean, excuse my language. They say, people don't give a damn anymore in this country. That's what they say. And to me, that's why I said public apathy. That is the biggest disease we are dealing with today. It is the fact that people no longer give a damn.
I think you're absolutely right. And that explains a lot about our current state. And again, that explains a lot about why you, like you just said, people who are right now, possibly in government, not possibly, I'm sure that they are, but people, good people within government sitting on very explosive information, things that could blow things wide open, and really open up some eyes. They're probably sitting on this information thinking, well, why should I? Why should I? Why should I risk my reputation? Why should I risk my job? Why should I risk it all, and go through this prosecution and persecution for nothing? You know, for no public outcry, for no, you know, for very little these days media attention, and for Congress to basically ignore it, or for the powers that be to basically ignore it. As you just mentioned, 10 years later, since 9/11, and no one's been fired, no one's gone to jail. And that is very disheartening. For people who do follow the news and follow this information, you know, that is very disheartening, very disappointing. And at the same time, most people probably don't even care, and the ones that slightly do, you know, don't do anything about it. And we are where we are because of that. And that's an excellent point. Thank you for your call, Selena. Thank you for that question. We have one final segment coming up with Traces of Reality Radio. Thank you for sticking with us. We'll be right back after this short break.
Their crowns. Oh, and the
All right, welcome back. This is Traces of Reality Radio, and we have reached the end of the program. This is our final segment here with Traces of Reality Radio, joined by Sibel Edmonds. So thank you very much, Ms. Edmonds, again, for taking the time today and spending the full 2 hours here with us. I really do appreciate that very much.
You're welcome, and anytime.
Thank you. And before I let you go, just one final question, because I'd hate to end the program on such a pessimistic note, as you mentioned. Let's see if we can find some optimism here. And here's my last question to you. And what I'd like to know is what you think can be done. What can we do? You know, those of us who are involved in alternative media, or even, you know, folks out there who are listening right now, those people out there who do care, who are genuinely outraged, you know, the irate minority, what do you think that they and we can do to at least attempt to turn the tide in our favor once again?
So one of the biggest obstacles in achieving the change, the real change, has been the fragmentation, okay? We have the groups, you know, like even within the Occupy movement. Then
right.
We have people within the libertarian, and I don't mean libertarian party, libertarians.
Right.
With the, I call it the lowercase L.
Exactly.
And I can decide more and more with them. And you're looking at some people who are constitutionalists, but they are so divided.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the system intends to do. And the other illogical factor that gets into this division is this expectations. And that is the part that is maybe illogical to me. I'm trying to find a way to communicate it. I see it even within the Occupy movement. You know, they would say, you know, this corrupt criminal government with all this stuff, civil liberties, NDAA, all these things. Yet they are saying, we want this government, this same criminal
yeah.
entity, to be in charge of our future, our retirement, our education, our healthcare. It's like, dude, you can't have both, okay?
You can't
One
have it both
the
ways,
first thing
exactly.
We need to have is independence. And the fact that we shouldn't forget that we have choices, okay? When things are getting bad for the school, I gotta say, I will challenge it. I will homeschool my child, okay? Because
Absolutely.
I will take responsibility. I'm just giving an example. Or yeah. when I go through TSA, I refuse to go through the X-ray. Oh, let's boycott the airlines. Because, you know, even though they have been overridden, those powers are still there, the separation of powers. Some movement has started, but the mainstream media is labeling them as racist and sexist and skinheads.
Right.
Because, and you have to think hard when the mainstream media classifies people that way. Because these people are just scumbags themselves, right? And they are safe there. We want to exercise our power, and we want to nullify. Okay, they're pro nullification. They're saying
yeah.
because the states can say NSA has no legal right to spy in my state.
Great
you know
point.
What?
Great
That's
point.
Standing up.
Exactly.
Or they can say I don't want TSA within my borders.
Absolutely.
And there are things I'm not talking about just goes to see right away, but I'm saying there are powers there to be exercised, but it's not being exercised, unfortunately, because people are so divided.
Absolutely.
Suddenly they bring in some other, you know, semantics, or they suddenly say, yeah, I hate this government, but I want this government to take care of me.
Right,
well,
right.
And have it.
You
and
can't have it both ways,
to,
yeah. Great
yes.
point. So I think just to summarize, I mean, the key is education, awareness, then resistance, getting the word out, coming together at a local level, I think is key to that,
Absolutely.
To the point you just met. Again, Sibel, thank you so much for joining me today, for the radio program. I really do appreciate it. Check out boilingfrogspost.com for more on Sibel Edmonds. And thanks again. I really do appreciate it, Sibel. Thank you very much for being here with me today.
Thank you for the opportunity. Have
Excellent.
A good one and keep up the great work.
Excellent. Thank you so much. This has been Traces of Reality Radio. I am your host, Guillermo Jimenez, reminding you, as always, on this grand chessboard, it is we, the people, who are now in check. It is our move. Thank you all for listening. Good night.
Gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run.